The first time London Marshall Lewis met someone from his birth family, I was sitting a few feet away from him on the floor with a mic, trying to figure out how I could capture the moment without interfering in it. It was awkward for me, but also a real honor to be invited to witness such an intimate and important moment in someone's life. It's during these times when people entrust their most important stories to me that I'm reminded of what a privilege and responsibility it is to get to do this kind of journalism and to have an audience that supports it. There's a lot of work that goes into producing offshore, and there are nights, to be honest, where I end up sleeping on the newsroom sofa. But I do this because I believe in the importance of deeply reported stories. And in an age of unprecedented media consolidation, with fewer and fewer resources to cover communities, it's my job to offer an alternative. Stories with depth, pace, and nuance that are rooted in respect for communities and their people. Reporting for Offshore has enriched my life, given me a better understanding of the world around me. If my reporting of London's story has done the same for you, I'm hoping you'll consider supporting this podcast with a tax-deductible gift. To learn more about the benefits of becoming an Offshore member, visit offshorepodcast.org/donate. On behalf of the Offshore team and Honolulu Civil Beat, thank you so much for listening to this podcast.
Immigration authorities in the Marshall Islands appear to be cracking down on the illegal baby trade after they recently stopped three people and an infant from boarding a flight to Hawaii.
How many babies are actually being illegally traded? It sounds almost like human trafficking.
Are there multiple investigations going on?
I'm sure you're aware that your name has popped up as a firm that has been involved in that.
I've spoken with him about that, and he has said that it was someone else who was recruiting.
So now they're down in South Arkansas and they cross over in Oklahoma, and so that's human trafficking.
Let me ask you something. Do you ever worry about, like, your daughters getting involved in something like this?
Yes.
Stuff?
Oh,
yeah. You know, as a parent.
People just become very myopic and just think that they just got to get that one child, one baby. But if we keep acting like that, then we're going to destroy the whole adoption system.
From Honolulu Civil Beat, this is Offshore, Stories from Hawaii. I'm Jessica Terrell. This is episode 8, our last episode of The Blood Calls. When we started reporting this season, we expected it to be a story about troubling adoptions that happened in the 90s. But it quickly became clear that issues with Marshallese adoptions were never fully resolved. They simply moved to new counties, states, adoption agencies. So we've continued chasing leads while producing this season. In this final episode of The Blood Calls, we're going to get some answers for London about his birth mother and share some pretty big developments about adoptions happening today. There are multiple law enforcement investigations underway, big community efforts to change laws, strengthen supports for birth moms, create cultural connections for adopted kids. But at the same time, there are signs that the adoption market is growing. Can current efforts to stop unethical and illegal adoption succeed when so many other attempts have failed? Everyone we talk to in the Marshall Islands has a story about adoption fixers. Young women being approached on the street or in hospitals. A sister, niece, or mother offered a chance to make a new life in a place with seemingly limitless opportunity. So when one of the most well-known adoption fixers in Arkansas gets stopped at the airport in the Marshall Islands, it makes waves through Marshallese communities across the world. In late January, Justin Ain arrived at the Majuro Airport with two Marshallese women. One was pregnant, the other traveled with a small infant. They sat waiting on the wooden benches outside the flight gate while Justin brought their passports and tickets to the agent. Then, at some point before the flight began boarding, Justin and the women he was traveling with were escorted outside the terminal by Marshallese immigration authorities. It was the first time in anyone's memory that women, or an adoption fixer, were blocked from flying to the U.S. The women later told authorities that they were headed to Arkansas to put their children up for adoption. Before the airport incident, Justin wanted nothing to do with us.
You don't have right to ask me what I do and what's going on with adoption. What's going on with Marshallese adoption? You need to stop. None of your business.
I don't...
This is none of your job.
I
hate you when you're trying to continue that. I really hate you.
A few months after the scene at the airport, he called Emily in the middle of the night.
I've been working for adoption for 5 years. And this is the first time I bring the girl from the Highlands. Try to bring her from the Highlands to Arkansas.
Justin said, despite wide rumors to the contrary, he doesn't recruit women from the islands. He was doing a favor for a friend. He doesn't deny that the child was going to be put up for adoption, but he said the woman approached him.
So the one I work with is going to say, I'm not believing green girl from the Highlands. No. We used to do that, and when they told him not to do it, then you don't do it. You don't like to bring girl, okay? A lot of risky problems.
He's angry that people are blaming him, when he says there are so many other people who do this all the time.
You know what? That's not right. You know how many girls they recruit to Utah? There's different people work for a pregnant girl. There's a lot in Utah.
There are many people in this business. But Justin, the airport incident, it seems to be a tipping point. In May, a Marshallese man whose grandchild was placed for adoption posted Justin's picture in a Marshallese Facebook group, claiming that Justin was selling Marshallese children. The group has more than 17,000 members, a huge chunk of the Marshallese population. Within a day, there were hundreds of comments on the post, a sign perhaps that this is reaching a breaking point. Dominic is one of the women Justin worked with. She grew up in Springdale. She didn't fly from the islands for an adoption. But she's facing 5 to 20 years in prison for what happened during the adoption process. Even though Bing and her lawyer agreed to meet with Emily, Bing's lawyer was really nervous about her client being recorded. So she wouldn't let Bing talk about a lot of things, on or off the record.
They are just... They will play this to a jury, and they will use it. And okay. I can't.
No, that's okay.
Bing is one of 5 Marshallese women in the Springdale area charged with adoption fraud in the last 3 years. Local prosecutors say Bing took an adopting parent's money without ever intending to give up her child. Her defense attorney says she simply changed her mind. The prevailing sense in the community may be concern for birth mothers, but there are also a lot of Marshallese who feel that women who are paid for adoptions, even if it's just for living expenses, are bringing embarrassment and shame to a community struggling to gain a foothold on the ladder of success in America.
I want them to know the truth, obviously, and I never wanted any of this. I just... don't want people to see me as a monster.
Bing got pregnant a year after graduating high school. She and her boyfriend had been together for a while. They both worked, but money was tight. Justin Ain, one of 3 Marshallese adoption fixers working for lawyer Von Cortez, matched Bing with an adoption family from out of state in 2016. Vaughn declined to comment on this case. Bing signed an adoption agreement, and the family started sending her payments for living expenses. But then, according to court documents, the adopting family said they started seeing posts on Facebook and Twitter that made them think she wasn't going to go through with the adoption. They say they watched her tweet about what to name her son, saw her post about buying a crib and other baby items, and live streamed a gender reveal party on Facebook.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
What is it?
The family said they asked her several times if she wanted to go through with the adoption. And each time she said yes. Shortly after her son was born, Bing withdrew her consent for adoption. The adopting family called the police, and a warrant for Bing's arrest on the charge of adoption fraud was issued last August. She'd heard it would be so much worse if she was arrested, so
I turned myself in.
She was booked and spent a night in jail, in a cell with 20 other women. She wasn't able to nurse her infant son. The weekend after she was released,
I got fired.
What happened?
They saw my picture on Facebook about the whole adoption thing. I was going to work, and I wasn't able to clock in, and then I called my boss, and she was like, oh, just turn in your badge.
Oh, sorry. Okay, it's okay.
Bing starts crying.
Sorry, this is such a hard subject to talk about.
I'm so grateful that, you know, we want to speak to people so we can tell people what's going on, right? Like, what's happening here.
She stopped going outside, fearing that people would recognize her and her son. But she couldn't ignore the Facebook posts.
A lot of people were just saying, you know, how can she choose money over her son? Or, like, they were just telling me to get deported back to the Marshall Islands and never come back to America. They were saying, like, I went to school for no reason. How can I be that dumb?
Bing's lawyer, Autumn Tolbert, says despite the growth of the Marshallese community here, there's still a strong anti-immigrant sentiment.
I've had a police officer several years ago in a small town here say something about, well, they're all here illegally, they should be deported. And a fellow officer heard him and kind of, we both said, you know, do you not understand? And he had no, this was a police officer who was arresting Marshallese people, had no idea why, you know, what their status was, what the background was. We even had an official in Little Rock ask us why we didn't use the Hispanic interpreter. And we had to explain that these were two different languages and two different cultures.
Discrimination against Marshallese doesn't surprise Bing. The outpouring of anger and judgment from Marshallese people in her community did.
Our community is such a caring, you know, loving, you know, we're such loving and caring people. Like, we always help our people when they need it. And for some people to go that low was, like, very scary for me. And I didn't expect anyone to say, go die or kill yourself.
Whatever happened with the adoption, Bing's lawyer says the fact that someone so young is facing a 20-year prison sentence for keeping her son seems especially striking considering the penalties in Arkansas for other crimes.
In Arkansas, you can strangle your wife or your husband to the point where they are about to pass out. It's called aggravated assault, and you only face 0 to 6 years in prison.
This is not a business for them. I think that's how it's being perceived by the community.
Kevin Lammers is a public defender in Benton County. He's represented several Marshallese women charged with adoption fraud. He thinks his clients are being misled by adoption lawyers or Marshallese fixers. The birth moms, Kevin says, don't have anyone to look out for them in the adoption process.
My clients often don't understand what's going on. You know, I can ask them, you know, what they thought when they're receiving these two checks, and usually they're at a loss for words or they can't really communicate what they're thinking. Oh, I thought it was for living expenses.
He believes someone is misleading or pressuring these women, but he doesn't have the evidence or the resources to do anything about it. He's not familiar with Marshallese culture. It's hard to get funding for an investigator and translator to go and speak to the community. He's so overworked that he can only have one or two meetings with his Marshallese clients per case.
I have suspicions about what's going on, but until I can actually bring somebody into court that says that this was misrepresented to them, my hands are tied.
So for now, he encourages his clients to go through with a plea deal, even though that means years of crippling restitution payments and court fees.
These aren't people who really have the means to be making these payments. But I can't have my clients go to a trial where the perception is that this is a business for them in this community and face 5 to 20 years in Arkansas prison.
Lots of people are concerned about the relationship between birth moms and the adoption fixers. But so far, at least in Arkansas, the only people punished by law have been the Marshallese birth mothers. Even the people responsible for prosecuting these cases think there's something shady going on. They're troubled by the fact that nearly all of the adoption fraud cases have involved the same two local attorneys. But Deputy Prosecutor Brynna Barnica says they haven't found any evidence of wrongdoing by the lawyers and fixers.
And I think, honestly, it's just one group of people we're seeing it with who may not have an understanding necessarily of our laws and maybe being told something by these attorneys that we're not getting informed. But,
right.
But no concrete proof of that.
In April, the Marshallese Consul General in Honolulu asked an assistant DA from Majuro to come briefer on the adoption issue. Jonathan Kawakami had little information to share about concerns voiced last year in Hawaii, but he did confirm that his office was aware of Justin Ain getting stopped at the airport and that there is an ongoing investigation into adoptions.
It's a bit difficult to share too many details about it because of the investigation.
I sort of noticed that, so there were two names that were raised. I thought I saw like a nod when those names came up. I'm just wondering, is there more than one person being investigated right now? Or is there anything you can tell us about? Are there multiple investigations going on?
What I can tell you is that there are multiple names that are coming up. And these names are linked together.
Justin Ain was one of the names that got this nod of recognition. And we've only just scratched the surface of something that's been building for years. Something that's set to explode. The FBI also recently launched another investigation in Arkansas. And we've confirmed that there's a current investigation into Marshallese adoptions in Utah by the Attorney General's office there. There are also valiant, community-driven attempts at making Marshallese adoption less sketchy. An adoptive mother of two Marshallese children just opened a nonprofit to provide support and services to birth mothers throughout their pregnancy. And a group of concerned adoptive parents, lawyers, and local legislators in Arkansas are working on a bill to curb illegal Marshallese adoptions that would appoint independent attorneys or social workers to counsel birth moms and increase the punishment for soliciting them. But there are also signs in the U.S. and the Marshall Islands that point to the problem only getting worse. New lawyers appear to be getting in the Marshallese adoption business. A well-established lawyer in Arizona who specializes in Marshallese adoptions recently passed the bar in Utah. The U.S. birth rate dropped to a record low for the second year in a row. In April, a military-funded study warned that the Marshall Islands could be uninhabitable by mid-century. All of this sets up high stakes for the future of adoption in the islands, and a growing opportunity for young Marshallese women to be exploited. The irony is not lost on us that the future of adoption in the Marshall Islands was explained by adoption expert Ginny Roby using the metaphor of water.
Water goes to a lower ground. It's seeking lower ground everywhere, where there are fewer barriers. And so it takes a long time for a government to realize that children really need to be invested in at a universal level and not just for the select groups that can afford to raise their children.
If you're looking for another podcast, check out She Says from our friends at WFAE, Charlotte's NPR affiliate. For the past year, reporter Sarah D'Elia has been following the case of a woman who was sexually assaulted by a stranger nearly 3 years ago and is still struggling to find answers. She Says we'll take you back to the night the woman was assaulted and the resulting aftermath. You'll hear her conversations with police, which will leave you glued to your seat. And you'll hear from detectives, forensic scientists, and attorneys to learn how this system works and what needs to change. In a world full of Me Toos, justice might look as swift as one woman speaking up, but there's a long and winding road to resolution. We're a fan of She Says, and we know you will be too. Find the She Says podcast now on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. Learn more at WFAE.org/She Says. It's impossible to know for sure how many Marshallese children have been adopted by American families in the last two decades. There's no law in the U.S. to track private adoption numbers, let alone the ethnicity of adoptees. Conservative estimates based on news articles, interviews with U.S. judges and Marshallese government officials put the number at a few thousand children, or 1 to 2% of the entire Marshallese population. It's hard to find someone in the Marshallese community who isn't touched by adoption. To put it a different way, do you know anyone who lives in Hawaii, Alaska, Maine, Vermont, Wyoming, Delaware, or D.C.? That's 2% of the U.S. population. It's easy to imagine the loss a birth mother or a child searching for their family might feel. But for a small nation struggling to maintain its culture, is there a different loss here?
That is a very hard question. I don't know.
That's Alson Kalin. He's from Bikini and was actually adopted by his great aunt in a traditional Marshallese adoption.
The way we are being raised here in the Marshalls is totally different from the stateside. We have this cultural family knit. It's like a block house. We are piece of that house. We are a block in that piece of the house. So no matter what kind of results that our life brings after 18 years or 21 years, we are still part of that block. So we all need each other, and we all work toward that.
No matter what a person does when they grow up, they are still a piece of that house. Their accomplishments, failures, part of the construction of something bigger than themselves. It's hard to know what the loss might be to the community when children are raised without a connection to Marshallese culture. But perhaps there are pieces missing from that blockhouse now. Holes in the roof that nobody can see yet.
So if it rains, the water comes in. And the mother sees that rain and says, that rain is the tear, you know. I wonder what happened. But outside the house, why wasn't I there?
We just picked up one of London's aunts, Neri Larry, from the grocery store where she works. Neri agreed to come talk with us after her older sister stopped picking up our calls. She lives above the shop where she works, so we agreed to take her somewhere further away, where she'll feel more comfortable talking.
I'll give you a see you all. Let's go by to see you all.
Anywhere that we can sit is fine.
To see you all.
Okay.
Neri looks more like London than anyone else in the family I've met so far. Slender, with a strong chiseled jaw.
She usually works at the the eatery for like from morning to nighttime, that she's used to it, she likes it.
Yeah.
But because of this, she's willing to make time for it.
We drive to a park and find a place to sit along the seawall.
My name is Mary Larry.
Can she tell us about what Dory was like?
My younger sister, she was one of a kind.
We've hit so many dead ends in the search for London's birth father. But here, talking to Neri, it feels like we've finally found something to offer London at the end of our quest. A small glimpse of who his mom was. Dory was one of nine children. Their family was from Jellywich, an outer atoll, but they moved around a lot. Dory's father, Reba Larry, the man London was named after at birth, was an agricultural worker for the government. Dory was outgoing, sporty, a little bit of a tomboy, her sister says.
Dory is someone who's not shy. Like, she was the outgoing one in the family. Like, whenever there's birthday parties, when people come and sing, she'd be out there dancing. That's not typical for, like, Marshallese, like, not to be shy. And she enjoys singing. She loves to sing like she was a star or something.
At some point, Dory moved in with her oldest sister, Kathleen, to go to school. That's the sister we tried to talk to when we first got to Majuro.
She was determined to go to school. But then when she moved to live with her older sister, that's when things got difficult. I think that's when she started a family while she was under Kathleen's care. And then eventually moved to Ipai. Maybe shutting down communication or something.
Dory was a teenager, 15 or 16 years old, when she had her first child, John. She was 21 when she gave birth to her second son, Reba, or London. Neri says she also has no idea who London's father was.
She was in jail when she heard of Dory adopting her baby. And I asked her how many adoption that Dory made, and she said only one.
Dory clearly kept some things to herself. Her sisters didn't know that she had two younger children that she placed for adoption. Her husband, the father of her three youngest children, didn't know about London. In all, she had five kids, three of whom were adopted by American families. What her sister remembers most about Dory is her smile, her laugh.
During family gatherings and KMMs and birthdays, you know that's Dory because she's dancing up there, whereas most of them are like shy people.
Toward the end of our conversation with Neri, Hillary seems to get a little emotional translating. He says it's the way Neri tells her story.
She's from a family where none of them ever complete school. And for her to hear that, especially the sister who died, her son, to make, like, go college, beyond college, that's beyond them. And she was really emotional about that, too.
That got you.
And that got me.
The opportunities London has received by being adopted, how far he's gone in school, how far he could still go, it's something we talked about together in Springdale, something he was talking to his adoptive parents about.
You know, I even texted them this too, but maybe when they hear this, it'll help them too, you know, that, you know, no matter what, they're like, you know, they're still the ones, you know, that gave me the opportunity and like, other Marshallese would never have had, being like with great education, you know, an environment, potential to go farther than I possibly ever could have if I wasn't adopted.
Adoption is complicated, even without some of the cultural and legal questions that arise in many Marshallese adoptions. But for London, it's clear in his mind that his life turned out better because of the choice his birth mother made. And even if there's pain on both sides, it's clear that there can also be so much love and appreciation from the birth families and adoptive families, like London's adoptive dad, Gordon.
Did you have anything that you would want to say to his mom or to his family if you could?
What a wonderful woman. What a sacrifice she made for her son.
and he would have told her how much he loved the child she gave him. On one of my last days in the Marshall Islands, I boarded a traditional voyaging canoe for an 18-hour sail to Jalowich, the atoll where London's family was originally from. London's family started leaving Jalowich after World War II, and their migration has followed the path of many other Marshallese, first to Majuro, the capital, then on to the U.S. He has family in Hawaii, California, Oregon, Springdale. Half of London's aunts and uncles have left the Marshall Islands. His Aunt Neri told me that she believed one day everyone in London's family, everyone in the Marshall Islands, might leave. London spent a lot of his life looking for a connection to Marshallese culture. And when he was in Springdale, he was filled with passion to help record and preserve Marshallese history. His determination to do that has ebbed and flowed in the months since Springdale. There was so much to process after the trip.
It's real hard, trying to think about this and trying to stay focused on everything else I had.
He needed to step back from everything for a little bit. It's going to take him a while to figure out where he wants to end up, what he wants to take away from this trip into his past.
Trying to decide, path I want to go down with all this, information.
The voyage from Majuro to Jalowich is roughly 140 miles. The wind doesn't always cooperate, and we have a schedule to keep. So we motor across ocean so flat and calm that it's almost eerie. Then through sudden squalls with rainstorms and gusting winds. I keep thinking back to my conversation with Alson Kalin about the people of Bikini being on a journey without an end, and whether climate change will one day force all Marshallese to embark on a similar voyage. How can you hold on to your culture on a voyage without an end?
On a journey without an end, family is all you need.
My family. They are the fuel in this vessel that I am using in this journey.
I do want to have a role to play in this, and I'll take that and go with it as far as I can.
Family is a big thing. We never come single. We always come in, groups.
Wherever you are around the world, although you're being raised somewhere else, you're still part of the Marshall Islands.
This is Offshore, Stories from Hawaii. I'm Jessica Terrell. This was the last episode of Season 3, The Blood Calls. We started out this season in a very different place from where we ended. And we're not done chasing down leads and trying to figure out exactly what's happening with Marshallese adoption today. So stay tuned for more follow-up reporting this summer, here on the Offshore feed and at civilbeat.org. And if you have tips, stories to share, or just feedback on the season, please email us at producer@offshorepodcast.org. To support our journalism and help ensure future seasons of Offshore, please visit offshorepodcast.org/donate. Offshore is produced by Honolulu Civil Beat, a nonprofit, community-supported news organization dedicated to building an engaged community with news you can trust. Our producers this season are April Estrelon and Emily Dugdale. Our executive producer is Patty Epler. Editorial consulting was provided by Lantigua Williams & Co. Our engineer this season is Jackie Sujiko. Special thanks to Gift Johnson and the Marshall Islands Journal, Civil Beat reporter John Hill, and Marshallese journalists Hilary Hosea and Suzanne Chitaro. And a huge komotada, thank you, to our friends in the Marshallese community for their support on this project. Mahalo for listening this season. We'll be back.